Without further introduction, Mrs. New Rochelle, thank you so much.
My pleasure. I'm going to move this a little forward so that we're not so far behind. Okay. A little closer. Okay. I'm going to pass out the microbes and just contextualize a little bit the topic. I chose to focus on Yerushalayim. Obviously, we have a very special year with the 50th anniversary of the reunification. So I think Yerushalayim always has this incredible imagery and power in our mind. But this year especially so. However, given that this conference is specifically about Primota and community, I'd like to challenge us to consider Yerushalayim in a different way as well. Not just because it's the anniversary of the reunification, not just because it has such an enigmatic power on our communal imagination, but also because I think it represents an ideal that we don't often associate with Yerushalayim in this way, and that we're certainly still striving to achieve. You know that Yerushalayim is actually unique in the sense that it has a disorder name for it. The Jerusalem syndrome. Yeah. Isn't that pretty incredible?
Yeah.
And what does the Jerusalem syndrome represent? It represents people who come to Yerushalayim and somehow are triggered for all sorts of reasons, and I won't even presume to introduce it to you, but are triggered to then become an alter ego of themselves, typically a biblical character, typically David, and I really have a hard time readjusting to reality. And so it's an identifiable syndrome. And I use that just as an example of the power of the imaginative lure that Yerushalayim has, certainly not as an example of the ideal that Yerushalayim represents for us as a community. But we know that there's so many multiple layers to the presentation of Yerushalayim in our tradition. And I want to explore that together with you this morning. Starting with Tehillim, Kuf Chaf Bet, we see referentially here, very powerfully packed into one perek, many of these layers. Shir Hamalel David, Samachti Ba'omrimli, Beit Hashem Nelech, Omdot Hayu Ragleinu B'Sha'arayich Yerushalayim. So in this stanza, we have Beit Hashem. This notion that God has a home, this notion that there's a physical space in this world that is somehow God's abode, a place, home is a place that that's a little bit of our origin story. And we certainly know throughout Chamisha Chumshei Torah that this home of God, Beit Hashem, is often referred to as Hamakom. It's not always identified. In fact, it takes only into Tanakh for us to first see the term Yerushalayim, Hamisha Chumshei Torah, if we ever refer to this space, this very special space that has this great spiritual claim to being Beit Hashem, it's Hamakom, which is an interesting enigmatic reference. It's the place, without it giving any specific geographic, and you can try to locate it, and certainly Chazal do, but it's still always referenced as Hamakom. And then after this first designation,
Hashem's also referred to as Hamakom.
Exactly, which is, makes a lot of sense that there would be, and should there ever be any kind of home, really, for our Kadosh Baruch Hu, it would be enigmatic. It wouldn't be, you know, with a specific coordinate. But it's an interesting question as to why Yerushalayim isn't specifically identified. In any case, here, this Beit Hashem, Yerushalayim Habnuya, and here we see a characterization of Beit Hashem that's not about location, that's not about function, but it's about its character. Ki'ir shechubra layachdav. It has this unifying quality. What that actually means, I hope we'll unpack in some of the other mikorot as well. Shasham alu shvatim shifteya edut li Yisrael lehodot l'shem Hashem. A new layer is added on. It's a Beit Hashem, but it isn't just this metaphysical transcendent space. It also is a place where omdot hayu ragleinu edut li Yisrael shasham alu shvatim shifteka. That there's a relationship to Am Yisrael. God doesn't just designate this, like, you know, spiritual home as a lofty, only a lofty ideal. It's also a place that we're expected to visit. It has a powerful attraction to us, and it has an impact on those who visit it, in the way that it's described here as Ki'ir Shechubra LaYachta, a magnetic appeal, a unifying appeal, an impact on Am Yisrael. And the Lashon of Am Yisrael here is very interesting because it's Eidut LiYisrael. This concept that there's a quality to Yerushalayim that impacts Am Yisrael, but also testifies to some quality of Am Yisrael itself. Right? So that's an interesting allusion as well. Kishama Yashu Kisot Lemishpot, Kisot Leveit David. And here we see two other functions of Yerushalayim. Kisot Lemishpot is what?
The Sanhedrin.
Yeah, so it's the judicial center. So you would think, okay, so it draws everybody close because if you have any conflict in your relationship with others, you know, Dine Mamanot or otherwise, you would potentially, I'm going to put some of the quotes down here for anyone who's coming in, you'd potentially have to go to Yerushalayim in order to resolve it. But then you also have Kisot Leveit David, which is royalty and malchut. So you have a city that has some great spiritual ideal represented there, a city that has a national identity there, right? That's Eidut LiYisrael. It has a judicial identity and it has a royal identity. Certainly many, many, many layers. And in this next, the concluding phrase of the next, of this last stanza is Sha'alu Shalom Yerushalayim, Yishalav Ohavayach, Yihi Shalom Bechelech, Shalva Ba'amenotayach. It's an interesting question of juxtaposition that after Yerushalayim is described as a judicial seat and as a royal seat, we have to inject this tefillah for peace, right? Because within those functions, potentially Yerushalayim is not going to always be so peaceful, right? And I think that's, you know, if you want to look at the juxtapositions, Beit Hashem is paralleled with Eidut LiYisrael, with the unity of Am Yisrael, and Kisei David and Kisei Mishpat is paralleled with this pursuit of shalom. And then we conclude this parak with Leman Achai V'Ra'aya Dabrino Shalom Bach, Leman Beit Hashem Elokeinu Avaksha Tov Lach, which has this combination of this being Beit Hashem, but a place where there's unity and peace for Am Yisrael as well. So in all of its functions, whether it's this spiritual ideal, whether it's this national goal, judicial, royal, or otherwise, there's this quality of peace and unity that Yerushalayim is intended to have. So there's no question that some of these components we are closer to, having the ability to literally go and daven at the Kotel HaMaravi, having the ability to have some judicial control, some, over what's going on in Yerushalayim, to build it, to see it thrive. You can go from month to month to month and find new neighborhoods. And we also recognize that there are lots of qualities that are referenced here that we don't have yet. I'd like to unpack what I've understood to be one of the more elusive qualities of Yerushalayim, which is this, almost like this, the counterpart, the healthy aspirational part of like the Jerusalem syndrome tends to be some type of delusional, you know, break with reality. And the Jerusalem ideal that I think Tanakh references and asks us to strive for might also be sometimes a break with reality, but one that we should be aspiring towards and really still struggling and aiming to accomplish. And I don't think it exists only in the realm of function or politics or only in the realm of tefillah. I think if we start unpacking the ways in which Tanakh references what it is we have to strive for when we think about Yerushalayim, we can see that it has a lot of expectations of us, and not just in the realm of politics, judiciary, and messianism, but perhaps something to say to us, even sitting here in Chutz La'aretz, that there's a Yerushalayim ideal that we need to be striving for. The key to understanding what it is that we're aiming for comes, according to Rav Aaron Lichtenstein's analysis, from this pasuk in Yirmiyahu, which is bemoaning the depth of loss that B'nai Yisrael experienced when they lost Yerushalayim and the Beit HaMikdash. And it's a classic extension of you know what you have only when you don't have it any longer. And in this pasuk, Yerushalayim, Yirmiyahu is telling us how bad it is after the Chorban, and how when Hashem promises to return Am Yisrael, the glory of Tzion, there's a reference there that helps us appreciate what we've lost. Ki ale'u chalach umimakotayech erpa'ech ne'um Hashem. And when I do heal your makot, your injuries, ki nidcha karulach, because you have been rejected and they call you the rejected people, Tzion hi doresh ein la. How bad is it that Tzion is referenced as the entity that no one is even seeking? It isn't so, just because you've lost Yerushalayim and you've lost Tzion. Tzion here, according to Rav Aaron, it's a reference to, obviously, it's Har HaBayit and specifically the Beit HaMikdash, but it's more the stage of Am Yisrael having been taken into Galut and not only having lost the Bayit, but having lost it so much, we're in such great despair, we don't even look for it. Ein doresh la. And therefore, that's the depth of loss. According to Rav Aaron, that's the flip side of the height of what it means to have something. When you are literally doresh it, it's not that you just have. If you have a loving marriage, it's not because you have the loving marriage, it's because you work for it, and you aspire for it, and you yearn, and you strive to keep it. Right? So losing Yerushalayim is a physical loss, it's a political loss, it's a royal loss, it's all of those other things. But the depth of its loss is expressed in this term, Ein Doresh La. And therefore, the flip side of it, according to Rav Aaron, is to have this ideal means to strive for it. Right? Whether or not you actually get it is even beside the point. Right? And that's why I think there's a real message here to us, even in Chutz La'aretz. To be a Doresh Tzion, to be someone who is striving. Here we're going into the 3 weeks pretty soon. So it's somebody who is striving for Yerushalayim applies to Am Yisrael, especially in Galus, right? And so, what is it mean? What does it mean to be a Doresh? We're going to hold that question for a minute. We're going to look at a couple other sources before we go to it. When we're looking at yearning for something called Yerushalayim, and it's not about political unification, and it's not about Mashiach, right? It's about seriously being in Gala and still having that yearning, okay? He's not saying take up arms. He's not saying make peace. He's saying Doresh. Where's your Drishat? What is it that we're yearning for? This is another parak in Tehillim where perhaps we have a clue. There's a certain element of Kedusha that Har Habayit, Har Kadsho, that Yerushalayim represents. And in this parak we see that it's not only in reference to the Kedusha of Yerushalayim vis-a-vis the rest of Eretz Yisrael, it's the Kedusha of Yerushalayim vis-a-vis the entire world. And here we see it in Pasuk Bet, Gadol Hashem u'mehulal ma'od be'ir Elokeinu har kadsho. So Yerushalayim is described as Ir Elokeinu har kadsho, a city of God. We already saw that, Beit Elokeinu, but here it's also har kadsho, the mount of his Kedusha, Yofen Nof Misos Kol Haaretz. And of course, you could read this narrowly. It's the most beautiful city of all the cities of Eretz Israel, or it's the most beautiful city of all of creation. And beauty here is not only representative of a physical beauty, although the Gemara does tell us that of all the halakim that were given of beauty to the world, the highest proportion was given to Yerushalayim, amongst other great gifts that were given to Yerushalayim. But here, I think what it's talking about is that Yerushalayim is this pinnacle. It's a pinnacle of Kedusha, a pinnacle of spirituality, and that striving, if you put together the expectation of striving, of being a Doresh Yerushalayim, and striving for something that's not political, that's not royal, that's not judicial, that's not messianic, perhaps it's striving for this Kedusha, and certainly that's something that applies in all different spheres and circumstances. In Hilchot Truma, and in Hilchot Beit HaBechira. I just brought you two sources in which the Rambam describes how the Kedusha of Yerushalayim is different than the Kedusha of the rest of Eretz Yisrael. And although the Rambam is using that status to explain different halachot with regard to Truma de Maisrot, the core for us, the key for us, is this last line at the end of Hilchot Beit HaBechira, where the Rambam justifies that the Kedusha of Yerushalayim is different in saying, even after the destruction of the temple, regardless of whether Bnei Israel were in charge of the land, whether they were sovereign or not, whether there were other entities who were in control of the land, the Kedusha of Yerushalayim is permanent. And I'd like to suggest that the aspiration of the power of Yerushalayim is permanent similarly, and doesn't connect specifically to a political reality, to a functional reality, but rather to this far more elusive and challenging goal of a Yerushalayim, the value of a Yerushalayim ideal. In order to get a little closer to that, I really want to help us appreciate what Rav Aaron meant when he said we have to be Dorish Yerushalayim. What does it mean to be Dorish, some ideal? I know, I could imagine a plan for being, you know, actually Rav Tzvi Hirsch Kalischer wrote Drishat Zion, right? If you want to create a political reality, you got a plan. You can make step one, step two, step three, step four. You can make it up. What does it mean to be Dorish, some ideal, like Kedusha, like the Kedusha that Yerushalayim represents? And so Rav Aaron walks us through different stages of Drisha, in the ways in which, and this is actually a lot of fun to do, it's an exercise to do in lots of different usages. When you take a term like Dorish and you look at how it's used throughout Tanakh and categorize the different things that it represents, right? So you could do that with lots of different terms. You have to have the kind of breadth of knowledge that Rav Aaron had, and this is what he suggests. So these various sukkim that I give you here are a collection of different stages of Drisha. It says that the first very basic level of being a Dorish, and specifically here to being a Dorish Tzion and a Dorish Yerushalayim, is really just practical. And he uses that example from Vayikra, Pasuk Perek Yud, Pasuk Yud, Pasuk Tetzayin, V'et Tzir HaChatat Dorish Darash Moshe V'hine Saraf. So it's a very practical one. Where is it? And we know that Yerushalayim actually wasn't so clear to everybody where it was. It's only, I think, the 22nd year of David HaMelech's reign that he was able to locate Yerushalayim and capture it and designate it as, this is it. That thing that we were looking for, practically, geographically, this is it. So clearly it wasn't something so easy. But that's a very, you know, let me know what I'm after. Make a target on a, make a mark on a target board. The second is a different level of drisha. According to Rav Aaron, v'darashta v'chakarta v'sha'alta heitev, that pasuk comes from a case where we're investigating claims. Witnesses come to a Beit Din and say something, v'darashta v'chakarta. It's not just simply accepting a factual reality, it's investigating it and understanding it from all levels. So Yerushalayim requires that same type of approach. Don't just tell me where Yerushalayim is. Explain to me why it's important. Help me appreciate what it has to do with me and what I have to do with it, right? Especially, again, as we appreciate what it means to lose Yerushalayim. And then if you look at the next two stages of the use of Darash, that Rav Aaron identifies, we see that it gets even more esoteric. In Dvarim, Chaf Gimel, Ki Tidur Neder Hashem Elokecha, Lo Ta'acher L'Shamo. This is a reference to someone who makes a promise about what they will and they will not do. It could be a Hekdesh reference, like, I am promising something to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Don't forget it. Ki darash yidrashana Hashem Elokecha me'imach, v'haya b'cha chet. Hashem holds you accountable, right? So even, you would say, you know, a judge and a jury certainly hold you accountable too, right? But you might get away with them not actually finding out what the real facts are. They have, right, in the earlier pasuk, they have a fiduciary responsibility to do their best, due diligence. But here, we take drishat to the level of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. At the level of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's the ultimate accountability. And so the drishat that Rav Aaron says is necessary in order to repair the injuries of galus is a drishat that is practical. It's a drishat that is sought after. And it's a drishah that Hashem's going to hold you accountable for, right? So you have your hishtadlus. You have a level of energy and effort that's required of you. And it's not just what you hold of yourself or what others might hold of you, but it's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu will hold of you as well. And then in the last pasuk in Devarim, the last source here, it says, Eretz Asher Hashem Elokecha Doresh Otah. And here we see something different even. Yes, it is also still HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who is Doresh, but what takes this expectation of Drishat Zion and connects it to Imitatio Dei. It's not just Hashem being Doresh you because you promised something. Even if you made no promise, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, this is a part of what it means to be Mahu Rachum Afatarachum, to be an Eved of Hashem who's modeling themselves after what Hashem sets as an expectation. If Hashem is Dorish Zion, then you most certainly need to be Dorish Zion as well. I brought this next pasuk from Yeshayahu just because it's a pasuk where Drisha is used so commonly and everyone knows it. This is referencing right the time where we said where we have an expectation of tshuva, and although this pasuk Rav Aaron doesn't bring it in relation to drishat zion, I know that we all reference it when we think about the tshuva process, and for some, the 3 weeks and the 9 days and Tisha B'Av of the summer is like the early stages of the tshuva that gets us prepared for Elul. So to keep in mind that while this might be focusing on drisha of Yerushalayim and drisha of Tzion, of this great ideal called Har Kadosho, it's certainly a part and parcel of our overall drisha of looking for HaKadosh Baruch Hu in our lives. So there are a lot of special things that are said about Yerushalayim. And there are many Midrashei Agadah that articulate Yerushalayim's beauty, Yerushalayim's extra Kedusha, Yerushalayim's higher level of Nevuah. There are like a whole list. And in Baba Kama, I just brought you a short version of it, but I wanted to show you one of the core principles about Yerushalayim being different from all other areas of Eretz Israel that has tremendous halachic ramifications, and for our purposes today, also this great hashgafic impact, is this principle of lo nichlaka Yerushalayim l'shvatim. That Yerushalayim, different from every other part of Eretz Israel, was not divided up into the Yerusha, into the chalukah of the various shvatim. Yerushalayim lo nechlaka. And there are halachic ramifications to that.
Is it in Shevet Binyamin?
It's a great question.
It's on the line.
So, exactly. So there is actually, I actually heard Rav Shachter over Shavuos describe how practically there are spaces that people say is Binyamin, is Yehuda, and there's it's quite a machlokas, but there's no question that certainly Har Habayit, how extensive it is not lo nechlaka, right? Which parts of Yerushalayim, which boundaries, over which time periods, when, those are up for debate, but there's a quality, and Har Habayit specifically, that is not nechalik to any shape.
So
okay?
It belongs, like, then to everybody.
So you can go back to the Tehillim and say Ki Ershachuba La Yachdav. That's the preeminent expression of unity, that it doesn't belong. Nobody can fight over this is my piece, this is my piece, even though they did.
Yeah.
But the core principle of Yerushalayim goes back to this: it belongs to everybody. So I want to show you some of the
everybody meaning only Jews.
correct. Right. This is not the United Nations declaration of it belonging to everybody internationally, but yeah, that, it has not been divided up amongst the Shvatim, right? Lo nechlecha, no, lo nechlecha Yerushalayim l'shvatim. So I'll just give you two examples of halachic instances that are impacted by the status. One is the Egla Arufa, and the other is Ir Nidachat. Yerushalayim can never be an Ir Nidachat, and Yerushalayim doesn't have the halacha of Egla Arufa because it's not owned by one shevet. So if somebody dies right outside of Yerushalayim, actually, all the Shvatim are responsible for it. How's that so? Because typically the law of Egla Arufa is a condemnation of the leaders of that community. You didn't take care of your visitors. You let them walk out without any guidance or any security. Well, who are you going to condemn in Yerushalayim? It's everyone's, okay? And so that's where we see that this is, and there are lots of... It could be.
For the Egla Arufa. I mean, it's not divided into Shvatim, but there's still...
Should be like...
There's still a population, there's still a community living in the city, and the Zikni Ha'ir, I guess, would be, the Sanhedrin.
You would imagine that's so, and I think the Sanhedrin has very, very clearly defined rules and jurisdiction, and it's interesting that the choice is not to do it with the Egla Arufa. I can't make a full case for why, but I think, and maybe it is about jurisdiction and the notion that this is, this is not the same city as everywhere else. I think that's what emerges from the list of the halachot that do not apply to Yerushalayim, in which it cited lo nichlaka Yerushalayim l'shvatim bein hashvatim. It cited specifically to designate Yerushalayim as a different place, and the difference is so great that it cannot be associated in this type of division. Right, so I guess willing to take Egla Arufa as an example, which is really harsh because we know what that feels like, right? It's the security. I know that I have lots of friends who are living in the Gush area and under the current security circumstances, and it's ironic because within even Gush Etzion or Alon Shavuot, the heads of security of the entire state live there, right? And their security has not been as good as it could be, perhaps, right? And so, and I know in the community meetings, they're talking about specifically Egla Arufa, like it is actually our responsibility. No one's allowed to leave the city and not feel like they're being protected properly. It's a mind-blowing manifestation of a halachic sensibility. And Yerushalayim also being the designation of so many people for such regular visitations, you can imagine if Egla Arufa was a place, what a crazy mess that would be, right? Like you have millions of pilgrims coming in and out. You don't have to examine how they do it at other places other times of the year. But I think this list within Bava Kama is really important because it's working so hard to help us appreciate that Yerushalayim cannot be divided, even under circumstances like security. So here's what Rav Aaron suggests. Why can't Yerushalayim be divided? Because its essential quality is one of unity. Because it's a central quality, the only way that you can have a judicial seat, a royal seat, a kadosh seat, a Beit Hashem seat, is if, in fact, divisions don't exist there. It's almost like the social parallel to David not being able to build the Beit HaMikdash. David wasn't able to build the Beit HaMikdash because he was a man of war. His war was necessary for peace, but his war could have no part of the actual... Makom HaMikdash, right? It was a necessary corollary, but it couldn't have no part to it. And so division of responsibility is really important. You can't run a country without it. You need to have an Egla Arufa situation. You need to have, when you divide something up, you're responsible for this, and you're responsible for that, and you're responsible for that. But Yerushalayim could not be that place. Yerushalayim had to be the place that we were all responsible for, that unified us and didn't divide up our responsibilities and didn't leave us at odds with each other. And one of the most beautiful manifestations of this is the fact that at the end of Yechezkel, in describing how it is that Am Yisrael will ultimately be redeemed from a galut that was so brutal and so long and so divisive and full of tragedy, Yechezkel describes that that ultimate goal of Am Yisrael coming together happens in the following way. And these are the last psukim of Yechezkel's nevuah. He says, Ve'ela tota'ot ha'ir, Am Yisrael will come streaming back. And when they come streaming back, they will come through these gates. These are the exits or the entries of Yerushalayim. And he itemizes each one of the gates, and each gate has a name for a shevet. And it's owned by that shevet, not that part of the city, just that gate. You can only get to Har HaKadosh if you have the sense that you belong there and everyone belongs there. Every single gate of Yerushalayim was named for a shevet, and every shevet knew that they belonged, and every shevet knew that nobody owned Yerushalayim more than they did. This is my gate into a unified city in which all of Am Yisrael is unified. And at the very end of describing the gates and the location and the physical manifestation of you belonging in Yerushalayim, what happens? V'shem ha'ir miyom Hashem, miyom Hashem, shama. I'm not sure why the pesukim are out of order here, but that's only when Yerushalayim gets to be called b'shem Hashem. And if you look at, obviously, the origin name of the city, even after Chamish Echem Shetorah calls it Etam HaKom, we call it Ir Shel Shalom. There's a shleimut in Yerushalayim. That's its origin. That it cannot be divided, and it cannot be owned, and it cannot be separated amongst Am Yisrael. Now, I found two halachot that I thought were the most magnificent manifestations of this. And I'm going to close with these two halachot. Because you might think that this Yerushalayim ideal of unity, of really Am Yisrael seeing themselves not better than the next, each shevet really connected to each other, with a shared destiny in Yerushalayim, and with a shared fate. If your gate doesn't work, my gate doesn't work. If we don't all go together, this place is not going to be Shem Hashem, right? So those are really nice, you know, feel-good, achdus messages that come along the time of the 3 weeks, and we really understand what we've lost. And we can celebrate the unification of Yerushalayim politically. We can celebrate the unification of Yerushalayim religiously because there's more Torah there now than there's ever been. But I'm not sure we're ready to really celebrate the spiritual message of Yerushalayim, which is this message of Achdus. And the manifestation I found that was so fascinating is in these last two halachot. So if you want to read them with me, first is in Brachot, and the second one is in Chagiga. By the way, the sources that I gave you here are actually cut and paste out of a portal called Sefaria. If anyone has seen it, it's Sefaria. I don't know if it's com or org. I think it's org. Incredible. Layers and layers and layers, and clear as day. If you thought art scroll was good, this is like beyond, and totally accessible to everybody. So you can tell your Talmud Bavli. Oh, thank you. You can tell your kids to stop writing down every single word that the teacher says. They can always go to Sefaria.com and .org, and they're going to understand it even better. Sefaria. Sefaria. And they do not pay me to say that. I just think it's amazing.
This is from Ira Lacomos?
Yeah, you can get almost anything there. Okay, so the first one is a fairly common halacha that people know. V'chol ha-chotem manchel arzot b'brachot ha-aretz u-moshiat Yisrael b'boni Yerushalayim ha-reizah bor v'chol she'eno omer b'brit v'torah u-b'birchat ha-aretz u-malchut b'it David b'boni Yerushalayim lo yatza yudei chuvato. So in describing the different brachot of Birkat HaMazon, there's an essential requirement to include Bonai Yerushalayim as connected to the bracha of Malchut Beit David, that you cannot really appreciate the brachot that Hashem is giving. We know that that's what Birchat HaMazon is. You cannot appreciate the brachot of Hashem, what Hashem is giving, if you don't include Yerushalayim in addition to Beit David, which shows you what? Yerushalayim is not just the location of Beit David, but it's a separate goal. Beit David is one goal, and Yerushalayim is another goal. And the Vilna Gaon used to say, actually, that you should not say Bonei Brachmav Yerushalayim. You should just say Bonei Yerushalayim. What do you have to ask Hashem for Birachamav? He promised it to us. Literally, the Vilna Gaon said, no, they're not asking Hashem, please give me Yerushalayim. You're saying, Hashem, you give me Yerushalayim because it's an essential quality of Am Yisrael. And as you can see, if in fact Yerushalayim represents the unity of Am Yisrael and the aspiration for us to have that kind of achdut, then it is an essential quality. The next halacha is actually even more fascinating, which represents the fact that the Gemara tells us that during the time of Bikurim, when someone would bring their oil or their wheat, you wouldn't have to ask them about their status of Tumah and Tara. That's wild. Literally, someone's walking off the street and you accept their donation to the Beit HaMikdash. You simply accept it without any investigation, without any like qualifications, without looking for the bugs or the hechsher or where they came from or an ishur from a Rebbe or anything like that. You're not looking for a chasima. If a Jew walks into Yerushalayim with a donation, you accept it. That's wild. Why? Gemara asks, why? Why would we ever do that? Doesn't that undercut everything we ever say? Because Yerushalayim is different. Lo nichlaka Yerushalayim. If you create divisions in Yerushalayim, everything else will fall apart. Yerushalayim, by its... If the minute someone walks into Yerushalayim, they've made the halicha, they now qualify. We let go of all of that, because they've walked through their door to their city, and they are trustworthy. So it's really unbelievable when you think about all the various chumras that people place on themselves, who they're going to eat with, where they're going to eat, when they're going to eat. Well, we don't live in Yerushalayim yet, right? And we're not Har HaBayit. But we have to know what we're aiming for. We have to know what we're striving for. And we have to realize that that goal of being able to extend a trust to every single member of Am Yisrael, right, under the right circumstances, in the right place, is represented by what happens in Yerushalayim. And that's when Yerushalayim is both unified and unifies, and that's the goal that we ought to be aiming for in Mirat Hashem, able to celebrate.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
What a great message. Amazing. And that's why we know that it's not just a political aspiration.